It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Green Bay has a growing Somali-American population. We'll talk to two women living in the city who helped write a new book about the experience of Somali immigrants in Wisconsin. First, we age from the minute we're born, and if we keep doing it long enough, we reach what's called old age. According to U.S. Census data, the number of people 65 and over is projected to reach almost 95 million by the year 2040. And the 85 and over population is projected to more than double by then to 14.4 million people. But our next guest says when it comes to medicine and our culture, we often treat aging like a disease rather than a phase of life. And that could be bad news for the health care we provide for older people, but there are things we can do to make improvements. Dr. Louise Aronson is a geriatrician, educator, and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Her new book is called Elderhood: Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. Dr. Aronson, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, you say we treat aging in many ways in our culture like a disease, a medical condition. How does that seep into the way we treat people as they get older?
Well, it makes them by definition impaired or ill in some way. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it equates an entire huge segment of the population and a whole phase of life with something pathological. We don't tend to do that at other phases, and each phase of life has its pros and cons. So although there's some pretty exciting science about aging, I think conflating the two really diminishes how we think creatively about the opportunities that old age provides for us, both as individuals and as a society.
You write that among other cultural biases about aging, there's one in the medical community. People don't often think to go into geriatrics, and it tends to be looked down on. Because of that, I'll ask, why did you pursue this as your line of work?
I love that question. Well, you know, I had no intention. Like most medical students, I didn't hear much about geriatrics. And what happened was just by chance, I trained initially in internal medicine, so medicine for adults. And I just by chance had a clinic that had a lot of older patients in it. So I began to realize that although I was at the best primary care training program in the country, I wasn't learning how to meet many of their needs. I was learning about common diseases that happened in adults generally. Not much about the diseases specifically that become more common with aging, or importantly, about how those diseases that we also get as adults manifest and are treated differently as we get older. I also, in the hospital, kept seeing really horrifying things where people who were older would get basically the same, you know, say somebody was 85, they would get the same treatment for whatever they had as we would give to a 55-year-old. And they would often end up dying or suffering. And sometimes when people said, well, this isn't working, let's withdraw care, they would actually blossom and do better. And instead of sending them home on hospice, I'd simply send them home. And all those things gave me a sense that there was, that we weren't doing things the right way, and also that there was an opportunity to make a huge difference for a part of life that we all, if we get lucky, will arrive at.
Why do we have this blind spot? There are so many different examples you give of ways in which we kind of get medicine and related treatment for seniors wrong. Why do we have so many gaps in our treatment system?
Well, part of it is that there weren't so many older people until just recently in history. So we really were set up to treat the people who existed then. And it takes a long time to make a cultural shift. But I think that's actually been worsened and compounded by ageism, which is ubiquitous. You will find, or at least I find, so I live in San Francisco. We're known as a liberal city. And, you know, there are good reasons for that. We don't do everything perfectly, but we really have a sense of respecting all different sorts of people. And yet you can hear people from all different ages and backgrounds, including older people themselves, make jokes about old people that if you replace the word old with woman or person of color or gay or lesbian would be entirely unacceptable. And, you know, doctors, nurses, other people in healthcare are human beings and products of culture like everyone else. So we have said on the one hand, for instance, in research, that older people are different from younger people. So we're not going to put them in our studies because, you know, they just complicate things. And yet we'll take the results of those studies and we'll apply them to older people. And then when things go badly, because the people are different, we blame old age instead of the bad science that led us to administer treatments to people when we don't have any proof that they help them. In clinical care, we have children's hospitals and adult hospitals, children's specialists and adult specialists of all different kinds. And yet all of us know that an 85-year-old looks as different from a 35-year-old as an 8-year-old does. And they're different socially, they're different behaviorally, they're different physiologically, yet we don't give older people the same respect and opportunities, the same tailored health systems to their particular life stage that we give everyone else, that we give children and adults. And that's why in the book I really talk about thinking about elderhood as the decades-long varied stage of life that it is, and a perfect analog in old age to childhood for kids and adulthood for adults.
Talking to Dr. Louise Aronson about her new book. It's called Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. Let's talk about that concept at the center of your book some more, Dr. Aronson. Elderhood, it's not a sense of, okay, this is decline or this is the period of life where we give up or people give up on it, on us. What is your positive definition of elderhood?
Well, my positive is just, I don't even think it needs to be positive. It just needs to be neutral and equivalent to childhood and adulthood. So if childhood lasts, let's say, our first 20 years, traditionally throughout history, this was actually fascinating, throughout history and cultures, almost everyone has defined old age as beginning between the years of 60 and 70. And people, when they look at other people, will call them old beginning in that age range. But when it comes to themselves, they generally won't, because we have begun to associate. I know it's actually, and we all do it. You know, I talk about in the book how I'm in my mid-50s, but as I entered my 50s, I began making those comments everybody makes. Even though I've spent, you know, decades now working on old age, we are all products of the culture. So this isn't about blaming. It's about recognizing the opportunity we have to do better in ways that will help all of us. So I guess when I think of elderhood, I think of it beginning somewhere between the ages of 60 and 70 and lasting the next 30, 40, 50 years, depending on how long you live. And just as for childhood, we have neonates, infants, toddlers, young kids, tweens, teens. And for adulthood, we have young adults and middle-aged and maybe early seniors. So too in elderhood do we have people who are widely different in what they do and how they live. So when we talk about older people are a burden, I think we're not really using the evidence we have at hand, which is that people in their 70s, for example, are the fastest growing segment of the workforce. Equally, that people in old age get happier and much less anxious. This begins in people's late 50s, and the data shows that in countries like the United States, so this is not true of the very poorest countries, but in countries like the U.S., people begin getting happier and much less anxious around 60, and things just get better for a couple decades after that. Now, does that include the growing percentage of people who have serious illness? Not always, but actually sometimes it does. Recent studies have shown that most older adults rate their health as good, very good, or excellent. And that's not because they can do at 78 what they did at 38, but because, all things considered, they are having a good life and their health is adequate to let them enjoy that life.
One medical point that you run across a lot of times in your career is that sometimes something goes wrong for a person over age 60, and people, maybe even medical professionals, just chalk it up to, well, that's just normal. That's what happens when you get old. And you find case after case where that leads to people missing the actual problem that's going on. How do we get past that assumption that it's just natural?
I think old age should not be a diagnosis unless you're really looking at basic science of you know, aging, which is a whole other conversation. But clinically, you know, I tell this joke in the book. It's one of my favorite jokes of all time, actually, which is, and this happened actually in New York, 97-year-old man wasn't able to see his regular doctor. So he went into the doctor because he was having pain in one of his knees. And the doctor asked the usual questions, did the exam it ever? And then he said, well, you know, what do you expect? The knee is 97. And the man's response was, well, my other knee is 97 too, and it doesn't bother me a bit. So that to me just encompasses the entire problem, that health things are more common as we age, just as the need for education is more common in childhood and the need for occupational training is more common in adulthood. At different phases of life, we have different primary needs. In old age, we have more needs for health. But that just means we're more likely to get certain conditions. It doesn't mean that we are ourselves a pathology.
Dr. Louise Aronson is with us. She's a geriatrician and the author of the new book, Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. Let's bring on a caller now. We have Elizabeth with us in Milwaukee. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Elizabeth?
I've worked in nursing homes in my 20s, 30s, and 40s, and a woman put me in my place one time. I was very condescending, and I sat down in a chair, and I learned, who do I think I am? And it's not because I'm older now, but what I realized is all of us in America, wherever, will be old one day or whatever you want to call it. We're human beings, and the things that I learned were just phenomenal. And even in 2019, when I see someone, people might call people that are getting older, whatever, and I don't even know how to define the age, sweetie, kiddo, hun, patting them on the head, very condescending, like they're children on a TV program that I've watched, you know, in the last 30 years. Dr. Anderson, I feel so wonderful listening to you. I feel like you're the first person that's ever said what I felt in my soul. And it's not because I'm getting older. I knew it in my 20s, 30s, and 40s after this woman let me know what she thought. And she gave me the best wisdom I ever experienced. And I loved it.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Aronson, what do you think?
Oh, I thought that was a great comment. Thank you, Elizabeth. It also reminded me of two things. One that I forgot to say when you asked me why I became a geriatrician, and the reason was the stories. If you're a person who likes stories or likes interacting with people, dealing with older people or being with older people is an absolute pleasure because they have more of them over more time. So that was one thing I neglected to say. Elizabeth also touched on wisdom and the way in which we tend to infantilize or disregard old people. It's as if the people part is gone, and it demoralizes people. And it actually, in studies, what we find is that people begin apologizing for their very existence in ways that they didn't before. If a pregnant woman who's very pregnant needs a hand with something, or if somebody breaks their leg and needs a little more time to cross the street, people don't deny their very humanity, but that happens routinely to older people. And she spoke of times where other people were condescending or treating them like children. The other thing that happens is that they're treated as if they're simply not there. So people will ask the person beside the older person a question as if the older person can't hear or speak for themselves, which is crazy. And it's really bad because I have rarely spoken to an older adult, and I've probably spoken to many tens of thousands at this point, who doesn't say that the strangest experience they have in old age is looking in the mirror, because inside they feel exactly the same. So imagine yourself now, whatever age you are, and then having people treat you as if you're a three-year-old, or as if you can't speak for yourself, or have no control over your own life. There's nothing about that anybody would enjoy.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story, Elizabeth. Dr. Aronson, is there a movement in the medical world to change that bedside manner when it comes to talking to seniors instead of about them and avoiding that, as you said, infantilizing language?
Well, in medicine, we've been pretty good on the infantilizing language, at least, you know, in certain professions. I understand that it still happens in various places. It's a little bit geographically varied as well. But certainly in most professional training programs, we are taught not to call any patients honey or dear or any, you know, you call them by their names first or last according to their preference. In terms of treating people with respect, we have a ways to go. So sometimes in medical training, people will be taught a little bit about communicating across language barriers or across differences such as hearing loss in people who are deaf. But we don't do enough to talk about the ways in which we interact with people of different backgrounds and people who are older. And that includes people who may have cognitive impairment from dementia or who may have relatively new hearing loss or visual loss as they age from various diseases, or even just how to treat someone whose response is a little slower because maybe they're 98 years old, but they're actually mentally entirely there. How do you distinguish between a person who's just fine but responding more slowly and a person who might be having a delirium related to their illness? That should be happening all the time, and yet people will often assume people have dementia when they don't, or not consider they do have dementia when they have really fluid, charming speech, and that really leads to bad medical care.
Talking to Dr. Louise Aronson about her book, Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. Back to your calls now. Chris is on the line in Adams. Chris, hello.
Good afternoon. I have sort of a peculiar situation. I've been sick since I was a child and went through this whole process of the doctors not being able to figure out what was going on. I basically self-diagnosed with the help of a naturopath, went through that whole thing. And I'm 64 years old now. And what I noticed in going through my entire life with these illnesses is that when you're young, you're supposed to be able to function. And when you don't, people are very judgmental, critical, and cruel. But you get to be an older person and you say, oh, God, I'm having a really, really bad day today, which is the same bad day that you had when you were 25 or 30 or 35. But people have some empathy for that. And I actually feel better now because I have taken my health care into my own hands and I have figured it out. And I do everything I can to make myself as healthy as possible.
Chris, I'm going to jump in because we don't have too much time. Dr. Aronson, she says, well, on the one hand, she feels she gets more sympathy being sick when she's older. But on the other hand, maybe if that young person has a physical problem, they diagnose that as an illness. If that older person has that physical problem, they again diagnose it as old age.
Right. It's so many good points. What she's describing for her younger self is something called ableism, which is a sort of prejudice against people who don't have what we consider normal abilities at any age, although ableism tends to be applied more to younger people because, as she said, we expect younger people to all function perfectly, even though we know they don't, that people acquire or are born with a variety of problems. So I think these things are linked. On the one hand, it's fantastic that now she's getting more sympathy and help. The flip side of that is for people who are still fine, but are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s, who are assumed to be not fine. And this sort of brings us back to the previous caller and treated that way when they are able. So I think one of the things we can and should do for people of all ages is to consider, are they able or do they have some challenges? And be nice to them either way. And if you're not sure, just ask. Because actually people with the same abilities or disabilities have really different and personal preferences about how and when they'd like to be helped. The best thing to do is to respect them as full human beings and ask, what can I do something? What can I do to help?
Thanks for that call, Chris. Dr. Aronson, are you starting to see some signs of positive movement here? You talk in the book about these units called ACE units, for example, being in more and more hospitals.
Right. So there's lots of positive movement both in society and in medicine. So the ACE unit stands for Acute Care for Elders. And these are units where people get specific treatment for things that happen as they age. So really, the functional loss that can happen in a hospital happens much more quickly to older adults. So if people don't get up and walking, they are less likely to be able to walk when they leave. So, for example, you might come in with a pneumonia. The pneumonia gets treated, but then suddenly you can't walk because nobody's gotten you out of bed in a few days. And consequently, you have to go to a nursing home, which is most older people's greatest fear. So in these units, people would get the older person up and moving. They would do all sorts of things to prevent delirium, which is a confusional state that can happen to any patient, but happens more commonly with old age and acute illness. There are also some really exciting advances in surgery, general surgery, orthopedic surgery, really thinking about something called prehab, which is like rehab, right? Rehab is after we're going to try and restore your function. But prehab is, hey, let's get you in the best possible shape before your surgery. So maybe you won't need so much rehab or any rehab because you're going to sail through the surgery more successfully than you would have previously. So there is huge progress. I will say that there are already many very well-proven programs to help older patients and to optimize their medical care, but they tend to be adopted at much lower levels than programs for other populations. So that's something we could change right now if we were really thinking about the health of the populace. It's sort of ironic that on the one hand, we get all this drama about, oh, the aging population, the horror, you know, people use that horrible term, silver tsunami, as if aging is all bad, and they all wished they would die suddenly at age 55. But they talk about the horror, and yet they don't do the evidence-based treatments and set up the evidence-based systems we know that would decrease health costs and increase the health and function of older people. So you can't really have it both ways.
Dr. Aronson, thanks for joining us. That's Dr. Louise Aronson, geriatrician, educator, and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Her new book is called Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life.